It's all for television.
Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and we are winding down the third day of public impeachment hearings. I'll just say they're actually still going on as we record, but we feel comfortable talking about what we learned for the day so that it doesn't get too late and then this podcast doesn't make it into your feed before midnight. But anyway, today, four different witnesses testified. Three of them were on the infamous July 25th phone call, during which President Trump asked the president of Ukraine to investigate the Bidens and the 2016 election. This was the first testimony we heard from the people who were on the call and heard the call firsthand. So we're going to talk about what we learned throughout the day. And here with me to do that, our senior politics writer, Claire Malone. How's it going?
It's good, Galen.
Long day.
The fun never ends.
Also here with us is elections analyst Nathaniel Rakich. Hey, Nathaniel, how's it going?
Hey, Galen. It's going well.
And just to give a little background here, in the morning we heard from Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who currently serves on the National Security Council to advise on Ukraine, and also at the same time from Jennifer Williams, an aide to Pence who specializes in Europe and Russia. Then in the afternoon and into the evening, we heard from Tim Morrison, the former Russia director on the National Security Council, and Kurt Volker, the former U.S. special envoy to Ukraine. Hope you got all of that. Of those four, Volker was the one who was not on the July 25th call, so everyone else was. And the witnesses in the morning were called by the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee, and then the witnesses in the afternoon were requested by Republicans. So considering that this is the first time we've heard from people actually on that July 25th phone call, did we learn anything new about that phone call? What was the crux of the questions that the Republicans and Democrats were asking about that call?
Well, I think probably for Democrats, the most effective witness was Vindman to speak to the phone call because he is the Ukraine expert. He is the one who went to lawyers directly after the call and basically said, there's a problem here. Now, the Republican counsel then kind of and subsequent GOP members sort of tore into Vindman for going against the chain of command. He didn't tell his boss about it. I think reading between the lines, perhaps there's, you know, Vindman had some concern that maybe the boss would, who knows what.
Right. It seemed like there were weird office politics somewhat in play.
That's a very good way to put it.
If you ever have a weird relationship with your boss, know that it cannot be as bad as it was between Vindman and Morrison. That just, you know, playing out on national TV like that.
Truly. And then I guess Morrison, who is Vindman's boss. And Vindman was a Democratic called witness. Morrison, his boss, was a Republican called witness. And Morrison sort of concedes, yes, there were, he sort of split hairs a little bit. He said, well, there, I wasn't concerned with the call, but I thought that perhaps it would be bad if it leaked. So just pause with that for a moment. You know, I guess one can have can think a call is okay and also think that public perception of it will be bad. But it is, I think, a fine line to walk. Morrison is also, we should remember, closely aligned with John Bolton, who we also heard from Morrison. Bolton told Morrison to tell the lawyers after Morrison had some conversations with Gordon Sondland, basically saying that Ukrainians meeting at the White House was contingent on investigations of Biden and Burisma. There we go.
Yeah. All right. So, Rakich, what did you take away from what we learned about that July 25th phone call?
We didn't learn too much new about that phone call in particular. You know, I agree with Claire that the strongest witness today was Vindman. And I think, you know, this was now, what, the third day of hearing. So we're kind of at the point where we should start to look at them holistically rather than individual hearings. And I think that someone like Bill Taylor was a pretty compelling witness because kind of the, you know, the gravity of the situation that he conveyed. And then Yovanovitch was very sympathetic because even though she wasn't directly involved with the Ukraine phone call in question, she was clearly a target of, you know, Rudy Giuliani and the president. But the Vindman testimony really was able to rebut the criticisms of Taylor and Yovanovitch, which were that they weren't in the room, they weren't directly on the call, they were only talking second or third hand. And Republicans were, you know, throwing out those defenses, you know, in the hearings last week, but they, you know, that was conspicuously absent this time. And they were, you know, kind of trying to get at, trying to undermine Vindman a lot in a lot of ways that I think didn't really land. I think one of the more distasteful moments of the hearing was when Cantor, the Republican counsel, appeared to raise questions about Vindman's loyalty by the one new thing that we did learn. It wasn't about the phone call specifically, but was that apparently someone in Ukraine had offered Vindman a job as the Minister of Defense of Ukraine, which when I heard it, I was like, what? And it seemed like, you know, in the room, they were also treating it as, what a bizarre thing. But apparently, you know, this offer was made, and you know, whether it was a joke or not, who knows, but it was made repeatedly, and Vindman repeatedly turned it down. But just kind of the presence of this offer was kind of used to imply that Vindman might have these dual loyalties, which is a conspiracy theory that people on the right have made explicitly. This is because, also, for some background, Vindman is an immigrant, and his family came from the former Soviet Union when he was, I believe, 3 years old. So that was kind of a new revelation. There was also this strange line of questioning from Representative Chris Stewart that questioned the fact that he was testifying in his army uniform, which I think for television purposes, you know, looks great for Democrats. You know, Vindman had some very pointed lines where he said this was what Trump did was inappropriate. And I think that Stewart and also Trump, I believe, attacked the fact that he was testifying in uniform, obviously the military being a bipartisanly respected institution.
Yeah. In general, did the credibility of all four witnesses remain intact throughout the day?
You know, each are an interesting case. Vindman, during the questioning about basically the do you have dual loyalties, that subtext thing, he was obviously agitated by that. He seems like a guy who he's going out there on a limb. This is his opening statement, talked about his father moved him from the USSR to the United States for moral reasons. Okay, so this guy's out there taking a stance. Then you've got Jennifer Williams, who, you know, we were talking about this a little bit in the channel, and I'm not sure if it made it on the blog, but, you know, she is an aide to Vice President Pence. She wasn't necessarily like going out on the full limb and saying like, this is terrible. She was kind of keeping things between the lines. She thought this phone call was inappropriate, but she was, I think, a bit more reserved in how much she wanted to condemn the president. And, you know, she's still employed at the White House, right?
Yeah, she really seemed like she was trying to have it both ways, which I'm not sure is possible.
Yeah. Then in the afternoon, you had, you know, Kurt Volker, who is this longtime respected diplomat. We heard in the testimonies last week from State Department officials. Kind of interesting. People were praising his long career, but then sort of, I would almost say, mutedly, politely sort of declining to answer what they thought of his actions in Ukraine. And I think reading between the lines, it is Kurt Volker perhaps went beyond the scope of what some State Departments thought was proper by entertaining the Giuliani Trump investigations thing, because he had the, I think, you know, charitably reading this, the good of Ukraine in mind, right? This is the way he thought you got things done in the Trump White House. And then you've got Tim Morrison, who is loyal to John Bolton. John Bolton was just fired by Trump a couple months ago. But he also thought that this call was potentially problematic. So everyone's kind of an interesting moving part here. They kind of show the subtle dynamics of the Trump White House. It was just to me a very, once you kind of like pull everyone's context and identity out within the Trump administration, it was a very interesting cast of characters.
Yeah, there was a lot of plainly asking by both Democratic and Republican lawmakers how they would like to characterize what the U.S. foreign policy was toward Ukraine with regards to these investigations. How far were these different witnesses willing to go?
Well, everyone, even the Republican called witnesses, Volker and Morrison, essentially said the call was inappropriate or could be read as inappropriate. Now, varying degrees of how strong they're saying that. But there was no one defending the phone call, for instance, right? There was no one saying what Trump has said or what Republican lawmakers have said, which was,
well, the transcript is perfect.
The transcript is perfect. And I think that is, it's notable that the Republican called witnesses were certainly not in line with the Republican Party line on this right now.
Yeah, although they did ask them, the Republican attorney said, were you involved in any way in extortion or bribery or quid pro quo? You know, and they were all like, no, no.
Well, even the Democratic witnesses said that. Because as Adam Schiff pointed out today, you know, the witnesses are fact witnesses. And I think it was John Ratcliffe pointed out, oh, like the word bribery has not been uttered by one single witness in these entire hearings. But Schiff pointed out that the reason for that is that they are just there to kind of relate what happened, not to make accusations as to what kind of crime it may or may not add up to. And that, of course, is the role of the committee, which is going to draft the articles of impeachment, which is equivalent to an indictment.
Let's talk a little bit more about what went down today. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Honey. Giving holiday gifts is great. Overspending on all those gifts is definitely not. So why spend more money than you have to? Finding the lowest price is easy if you have Honey. Honey is a free browser extension that automatically finds the best promo codes whenever you shop online. This means you always get the best deals without even trying on over 20,000 sites such as Amazon, eBay, J.Crew, Sephora, Expedia, Target, Best Buy, and more. Honey has found its over 10 million members, over $1 billion in savings. Honey supports over 20,000 stores online, and it has over 100,000 five-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. If you're buying gifts this holiday season, then you need Honey. If you're not, you probably know someone who is, so do them a solid and tell them about Honey. Honey can help make sure that you're getting the best price for whatever you're buying. It's free to use and installs in just two clicks. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/538. That's joinhoney.com/538. As we've discussed on this podcast, it seems like the status quo is that Democrats are inclined to impeach the president in the House and Republicans are inclined to acquit the president in the Senate. But of course, there's more at play here than just that. Both sides are trying to present a story with political implications to American voters, because it seems like at this point, this will play a role in the 2020 election. So, Nathaniel, was it clear what kind of narrative the two sides were trying to lay out throughout the day today?
Yeah. So in the morning, Republicans kept on, I think it was Devin Nunes, who was just asking questions, which were basically, are you aware that Joe Biden did X sketchy thing? Joe Biden did Y sketchy thing. And the witness was just like, no, I'm not aware of that. And Nunes was basically just like, yes, I'm just saying these questions to say them on national television. I know, you know, they're not trick questions. I'm not trying to, you know, to say that you should have been aware of them or anything like that. And it struck me that they know exactly what's going to happen. You know, they're powerless in the House. The House is probably going to impeach, but then the Republicans will be able to acquit in the Senate. But what they can do with their national TV time is to kind of, you know, repeat the words Joe Biden and scandal in close proximity next to each other. It reminded me a lot of kind of what happened with Hillary Clinton and the emails, which was just create a lot of smoke around that. And then if Joe Biden does end up being the Democratic nominee, it creates this kind of air of impropriety there where, you know, maybe it just doesn't sit right with some swing voters or maybe Republican leaning swing voters to vote for him. And, you know, that obviously could be decisive in a close election.
What about Democrats for their part?
Democrats, I mean, I just think, frankly, that they have, you know, most of the facts on their side. They have a lot of witnesses saying the same thing, corroborating things that the whistleblower said. And I just think they are trying to emphasize that this is irregular, something that normal politicians don't do. I think that there's an idea that diplomacy involves quid pro quos, but they've been trying to separate it out into the political benefit that the president was trying to achieve. So I think they've kind of carried forward the same strategy throughout all these hearings.
Can I be honest? Like, what else is there to say? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think the Democrats, as Rakesh said, have facts on their side. I think the thing that has been to their advantage, if we are going back to the idea that impeachments are, it's not a criminal proceeding, right? It's a political proceeding. And this is not a court of law. This is a court of public opinion. Then the fact that they've had today an immigrant, decorated soldier, he's not the whistleblower, but sort of being the blowing the whistle on this call, right? Saying that this was wrong. And then they've got last week the kind of the woman scorned in her job, right? This woman who had worked her entire life and felt that she was improperly removed. That's a thing that resonates on a basic human level. Take away all the congressional mumbo jumbo. People feel bad for Marie Yovanovitch, right? Then you go to Bill Taylor, who's kind of got this as some people talked about last week, this sort of like jovial authoritative presence, right? A bit gives a wry smile and kind of answers questions straight up and doesn't mince words. And you've got George Kent, Mr. Bowtie bureaucrat, who's giving you the facts about the region and kind of like, I think that the characters that the Democrats have been able to present to the American public, if you have top line takeaways, if you're talking to your parents on the phone tonight and you say, what happened today? You'd probably say, well, there was this army lieutenant who said this and that, right? And he talked about America, right? That, I think that's what a lot of people will take away, because those are the easily graspable storylines. So to me, that has been the strength for Democrats, is that top line takeaways are these really easily graspable emotional storylines that have been told. Now, obviously, that only goes so far as, you know, if things ever got to the point of removal in the Senate, things would be much more technical. But, you know, I think Trump is being painted as a bit intemperate.
Yeah, I agree with that, Claire. And I think in addition to the emotional appeals, the visual appeals and just getting the clips on television, there was this big moment from today where Vindman said, here, meaning in America, you know, right matters. And then the hearing room applauded. And to have a uniformed military officer say that and then be followed by applause, which will probably get played on, you know, CNN repeatedly after that's a big win for Democrats optically.
Right. And I know there's certainly over the past week been this idea of, this is all theater criticism by the media. And my answer to that is yes. What do you think politics is? I mean, truly, you know, like political conventions, congressional hearings, Elise Stefanik and Jim Jordan's, you know, pas de deux of congressional rules. Like that stuff is, it's all for television. So yes. Part of this is theater criticism. Obviously, as I said before, if it ever gets to the point where it's a trial in the Senate, then the discrete facts become more important, because maybe you're trying to win over, you know, endangered Republican senators. But right now, as Galen said before, he's going to get impeached in the House and he's probably going to be acquitted in a Senate trial. So it's all about the optics, baby.
Well, there you go. And both of you have said something along the lines of the facts are on the Democrats' side. And we've laid out what exactly we've seen in, you know, depositions, on the phone call, et cetera, why you might make that argument. And it seems like from the polling that we have, a significant majority of Americans say that, yes, the president has done something wrong. In an ABC Ipsos poll that's out this week, 70% of Americans said that they thought President Trump had done something wrong. But you see still that only half of Americans think that President Trump should be impeached. So it seems like there's a difference between, well, the facts are on the Democrat side, it does seem like President Trump did something that he shouldn't have done, and the second part of that, which is therefore he should be impeached and removed from office. Is that the political battle that's being waged right now, like trying to get that 20% of people over onto the side of, you know, he should actually be impeached and removed? Or does that seem like it's not even a factor?
You know, it's interesting because perhaps comically, every time Devin Nunes has opened a hearing, he'll say, welcome to Act 3 or welcome to Act 2. And, you know, I laugh every time it happens. But also, one of the next lines he repeats is kind of, you know, this is part of Democrats' effort to remove Trump, the validly elected president, from office. And I think that does resonate with people on a level, right? That Maxine Waters has been calling for Trump to be impeached since 2017, right? That they're like, you know, people are paying attention to that. People know that Democrats have wanted Trump out of office, or have thought that he has been committing impeachable offenses, whether it be the emoluments clause or whatever, for nigh on 3 years, right? So in a sense, that's a very strong argument that the Republicans have to offer up, especially to, let's say, reluctant Trump voters, right, who maybe are ticked off at the president now and are not sure if they want to vote for him. But yeah, they did vote for him 4 years ago. And let me vote for him. Let me decide whether or not to vote for him in November. Like, I do think that there is something to that, where people understand that this is something that the Democrats have been seeking.
And when you also align that impeachment option with something that kind of very partisan Democrats have been wanting for 3 years, the kind of barrier for you yourself as a Trump skeptical Republican to then be like, oh yeah, that's the position I want to take, the position that Maxine Waters and Rashida Tlaib and all of these other very partisan Democrats have been taking for the past 3 years. Yeah, like,
right.
Of course that's going to drive you back towards your partisan instincts, which is like, okay, maybe he did something wrong, but like, I don't want to impeach him.
And it's probably what's been giving Nancy Pelosi heartburn ever since, you know, remember when Rashida Tlaib said when she won, we're going to go impeach the motherfucker, right? Like,
oh,
that
yeah.
is obviously something that, like, Democratic House leadership has been at pains to say to the public, especially the public in those swing districts that they have won the House on, listen, like, we're trying to be...
We're doing this solemnly. We're prayerful.
And, you know, like, as you were saying earlier today, Adam Schiff is doing these hearings rather than Jerry Nadler, in part because the perception that Nadler would be too partisan, and Schiff has gone out of his way to burnish the credentials of somber prosecutor of the case against the president.
Absolutely. Rakich, final thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, so that we have a few new polls. So you mentioned Galen, the ABC poll, which found that 21% of people had made their minds up about impeachment last week during the hearings. And of those, 60% made up their mind that he should be impeached and removed. So I thought that was interesting and maybe a data point that the hearings are going well so far for Democrats. That said, we have conducted our own poll here at 538 with also with Ipsos that you guys should go check out at 538.com. But one of the findings of that poll was, unsurprisingly, that opinions are highly polarized by party, and that independents are really where the ball game is going to be, and there just aren't that many of them to convince. So one stat that really jumped out at me was that only about 34% of respondents who aren't certain about their stance on impeachment are following the process closely. But the people who do have their minds made up, about 66% of them are following the process closely. So basically, partisans are tuning into this. People who are on the fence are not really tuning into it. The ratings, Nunes made a kind of a cryptic remark about the ratings of the hearings, but they've been relatively low. I mean, I guess high for hearings, but they've been lower than the Michael Cohen hearings. They've been lower than the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. So I think a lot of it is not really filtering down to the Americans who need to be convinced one way or the other.
That's up to Saturday Night Live.
That's up to Saturday Night Live. Indeed. Well, actually, as we speak, it seems like today's hearings are headed their way towards making it into primetime television.
Because, congratulations, C-SPAN.
Yeah,
today you become a man.
They started, what, 5.5 hour hearings at 3:30? So
yeah, that was not
gonna be
fun
going,
to realize.
They're going to be going pretty late tonight. But anyway, in addition to what we've said today, I know that plenty of people are probably going to be tuning in to Gordon Sondland, considering that he's the person who has spoken most directly to President Trump, well, of the people willing to testify about this issue. So we're going to be tuning in again tomorrow with a live blog, and we'll also have another podcast for you up in the late afternoon on that. But I think we should leave things here for now. Rest up for a big day of debates and Sondland testimony. Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Galen. It was been.
Thanks, Nathaniel.
Thanks, Galen.
And also, if you're listening to this but would rather be watching it, you should check out our YouTube channel. 530 now has a YouTube channel where we post all kinds of great videos, many of them produced by Tony Chow,
makeup
one of
tutorials.
Our favorite people who's sitting right over there. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Tony does the makeup tutorials.
What's the thing where people eat food in front of the camera? Do you know what I'm talking about?
What food would 538 eat in front of a camera?
It's always people eating like shellfish. Anyway, we have a YouTube channel and you should totally check it out.
And also a store, 538.com/store. Check it out. Also, tell people about this podcast. If you enjoy it, leave us a rating or a review. But also, like, even better, just tell people to come check us out if you think we're worthwhile.
Check it out.
All right. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. Our intern is Jake Arlo. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, like I said, leave us a rating or a review or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.